Welcome to our first webinar by ICC Languages. Our theme is about the business of culture, and we are very happy to have one of our board members, Barry Tomlinson, presenting. And I think we don't have much to say. Barry will start immediately. I would like you to turn off your microphone and webcam so we don't have any interactions. And important to say is the presentations consist of 7 points. After each point, you are welcome to ask questions. If you have questions, please use the emoji raise hands. You will find it on the bottom task bar on reactions, and or you write it in the chat to everyone to see everyone, and Barry can just answer the question afterwards.
Okay.
So, good luck, Barry.
Oh, I see. That's how it's good what we're on.
Oh,
Good.
just
Welcome,
Rob
everybody.
will just join.
Good. Well, I'm delighted. I'm delighted you made it. As I say, we'll have a chance to chat as we go through. I reckon the presentation will last about 30 minutes, but I'm going to stop after each point so we can ask questions. And what I call this session is the business of culture. Why? Because if you're teaching business English and you're doing intercultural training, as more and more of us are, and more of us want to, then actually it's understanding what the business market is like when you're training them, because actually intercultural training for business, as we'll see, is rather different from intercultural training and the language. And that's one of the points I want to address. But as I say, we're open to discussion and debate, and we'll see how we go. So let's go to the first slide, the first point, which is think business. I've noticed over what, 30 years of doing this, that basically corporate
Just
training, can you see?
I'll just everyone sees it? Yeah. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. Okay. Corporate training is about improving business performance. And that's what we have to understand before anything else. And the key issues, how do I make sure that the people I'm dealing with produce the work that we have on specification, on time, which can be a very big problem, and indeed on budget. Now, what's happening is if you look at the way the business is operating, there are huge numbers of workplace challenges. Teams are now multinational, and I work with teams with 10 or 12 nationalities. I'll be doing that next week with Panasonic. People are working with overseas branches, or I might be working with a company in London, which is an overseas branch of a major corporation somewhere else, like in Germany. I've noticed that supply chain management is a huge problem because as people go around the world trying to source products more cheaply from other places, they have huge problems working with the people who are supplying the products and the bits, and actually find that that's costing them more money and more time. And then the big ones, of course, overseas joint ventures, which can go very, very wrong. And above all, international mergers and acquisitions. And if you're a German speaker, I don't need to remind you of the experience between Chrysler and Daimler-Benz, the beginning of the noughties, when actually Daimler-Benz had to stop the merger and acquisition and sell it at a huge, huge billion dollars of loss. Because actually, the culture of the two organizations simply didn't match. So, basically, here's the message. Number one, think business performance, and we'll go into this more in a minute. Secondly, think about the type of business, where are the challenges that people are going to have? And then, third of all, I take this from one of our training partners, Pod, in UK, who worked with the United Nations in Vienna. And basically, Socrates, the Greek philosopher, said, there's no learning without remembering. We changed it. We made it, there is no learning without implementation. And if I'm working with a business group and I'm working on principles of intercultural understanding, then I have to make it clear, I have to ask them not just what they've learned, but how they will use it. because that's the way they are going to improve their business performance. That's my first point. Any questions, any comments? If not, I'll move on. Okay, all right, so let's move forward. The second problem that I want to look at is think management training, don't think language training. Now, I don't know how much you're aware of this. I run a program as part of a management development course, in which I look after the cultural side, and I was trained as a language teacher. I've worked most of my life for International House in London and around the world. And basically, that course has finance, culture, and management. And I look at the management trainers and I see how they operate. And I realize that what they're doing is very different from what I, as a language teacher and a cultural trainer, working from that. Number one, management training is run by the day or half day, not by student hours. This is something you really have to understand. Why? Because it is paid by the course, not by the number of hours worked. So for example, International House is not great on payment. Let's imagine I would earn a certain amount of money, let's say 25 quid an hour, 30 quid an hour for training, for teaching languages. Management training would be paid much, much better. You have to think in terms of hundreds of pounds, hundreds of euros. Don't think in terms of a few. So when I am looking at this, what I would do is to make sure that when I plan a course or present or pitch a course to a client, don't think of it in terms of language training. Even if you're teaching business English, think of it in terms of management training, because the pricing and the organization will be better. You may still do six contact hours, but you're charging by the day or half day rather than just by the number of hours you're working. And remember, the management training is paid much better. All right. Here's the interesting one, and this was given to me by a Russian friend, Anna Gorizontova, who's the director of Cambridge Exams in Russia. And she says, in language training, the teacher marks the student. But in management training, the participants mark you. And you have to be aware that the way we work is very, very different. So here's my advice on this one. Find out how management trainers are paid and base your fee, excluding expenses, on that. And on the courses we run, we do give advice on that. Can I ask you very quickly, how many of you are members of the organization called SIETAR, S-I-E-T-A-R? If not, think about it. SIETAR.com, Society of Intercultural Educational Training and Research. And they have a series of very, very good webinars, including some by German trainers, Stephanie, notably Rudi Kammerer, based in, I think, Frankfurt, who I think you know. And very soon now, in early September, and I've mentioned it in the references at the end of this, you can have a seminar with Alison Hale on how to be paid what you're worth. And I think if you're a member of SIETAR, you can probably go on to that site, watch the seminar. It's also put onto their YouTube channel. And then you can actually get advice on how to be paid. But I would say, for example, if I look at my colleagues, they would not be charging anything less than UK £1,800 a day for their work. So there's quite a big difference from what you're paid if you're a language teacher from what you're paid if you are an independent training consultant. Okay, all right. Any points anybody wants to add on that, or should we go straight on?
Yeah, no, thanks, Barry. Barry, thank you very much for making the point that I could not agree more. That it's a very interesting perspective that brings us, so to say, out of the, let's say, the pure language, the lesson, also in terms of fees ultimately. I'm doing, and you had asked me at the beginning, I'm doing management as an added value, because this is the point. Where's the added value? Yeah. I'm doing management and communication training. I'm still stuck into the hourly rate. My challenge is that to really, and it may be different in English, I'm teaching German. And the problem I have is you need to have in front of you a learner that has already a decent language level to be able to benefit from your capacities as a manager and communication trainer. Mm-hmm. What is your experience from that?
Well, basically, if you're going to work internationally, you probably need to have a CEFR, Council of Europe, framework of reference level of about B2, which is a good intermediate level of language to be able to make an effective presentation. But nobody knows. I mean, if I was a presentations trainer, and I've done this, okay, normally I would never have a few hours training for presentation. I would have a two-day program. So to start with, I'm planning on charging £3,000 to £4,000 sterling for the course. All right. Now, what you do is you then say, Ralph, right, so what we're doing is presentation training with practice, etc. You need a certain level to really get in on the act, as it were, to really participate. But it's not that high. And, you know, this is how you do it, and I give you practice, and I charge you a management training rate as a presentations trainer, not as a teacher of German who does presentations. And to be honest, it's your competence that will make it work. Yeah? Does that answer your question?
Perfectly, thanks.
Okay, anybody else have anything at the moment, or shall we move on? Okay, so we've done 2 points. Here's our third one. All right. Come on, keep moving. This is not a good time to have the thing stop. For some reason, it's decided it doesn't want to do anymore, and I'm not quite sure why. I'm sharing the screen. Everything should be fine. Give me a second. Ah, la, la, la. The whole thing seems to have frozen suddenly for reasons I don't understand. So I'm hoping it will not freeze any longer.
Barry, you're on edit mode.
Thanks, Michael. I'm on edit mode.
So press the escape key. That might work.
I will press the escape key. That's what happens. Yes, I think you're right. Good. You're brilliant. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
Michael Carrier, as you know, an ICC board member and an absolute expert on technical matters, especially to do with computers. And Michael, I'm so glad you're here. You might be saving our lives.
No problem. I only charge $1,800 a day.
Good point. Right. Now, here's one example of where I think the management and understanding is good. Sometimes, if you have a chance, it's worth looking at management theories. And one of the most influential one is this one by Bruce Tuckman on the stages of team development. It was done in 1965, but it's very good. How do teams work? They form, they storm, they norm, they find ways of working together, and that's what leads to performance. And if it fails, they have another stage called mourning, M-O-U-R-N-I-N-G, but I'll leave that one. What's important, we need to understand, if I'm working with a team in France or in Germany, I will need to understand how that team is formed, who is selected, who leads. I need to understand how they work, how they get their results, and how they present their results. And most people go into these things with their own backgrounds without really understanding the differences until they actually occur, and then they can get very upset. Have I gone into this again? Let's try again. Michael, I'm getting this problem again. I don't know why. I'm going to escape.
Press escape again.
Just escape?
Yeah.
And there's no escape. Yes, there is. Thank you. Okay. So basically what I've done, I won't go into that in detail now, but these are the 4 stages. I will make the slides available to you on the ICC Languages site, so you will be able to go back over stuff. But here's the point from Tuckman: a group that doesn't norm successfully cannot perform successfully. So the lesson is, if you can understand some basic things about management training theory and practice, that is going to help you relate to the business concerns of your clients. Okay. Point 3, avoid essentialism. I'm sure you're aware of this, but let's make the point. We all use nationalities as shorthand. It's easy. But we have to avoid assuming everyone is the same, especially now. And here's an activity I use with my participants on courses and get them to ask each other, which is actually a very, very good way. I call it get to know Joe. Joe is a unisex word in English. Get to know Joe. And we're different by national experience. So I get them to ask each other, where are you from? Then, and as important in many respects, regional experience. What part are you from? What's it like? Okay, then you ask about professional experience. And the question I get them to ask each other is, what did you do before you worked here? And how is it different? Very interesting this, because it gets them comparing their last job with their current job, and suddenly you begin to see where the problems are. Okay, then of course, social background and upbringing, where were you brought up, what was it like, keep it general, and above all, personal international experience. Have you traveled abroad much? Because if people have had a chance to travel, they may have open minds. Now let's imagine I've got 16 people on my program. If I get each one telling me about everybody else, we're never ever going to get to the end of it. So I just simply get them as a group and say, who learned something interesting? So I recommend that as an exercise. Now, what's the important thing? You have to break down the stereotyping that comes from the country and look at it in terms of national experience, regional experience, professional experience, social background, and personal experience. And this can really make a difference. However, there is one area which I think is worth knowing about. And this is our fourth point. So before I go into that four, let me just say, I think essentialism is a very easy trap to fall into. It's important to find a way of avoiding it. And the way to do it, I think, is some people, or some communities, or some people we work with. I don't know if anybody has experience of this in a particular way.
I had experience actually not just for the regional things. Hi, mm-hmm. But I'll put the video on to say hi as well, just in case. Which was basically not just the regional side of it, but also within departments within a company. Because quite often I had a company working together, and actually they didn't know what the other departments did. So there was an essentialism between, say, technical people, commercial people, administrative people. And so and they actually only found out what the other parts of the company did through the workshops that I was running with them. So I think you can broaden the notion of essentialism, not just for, let's say, origin, but also sort of a professional discipline and things like that.
Yep, I agree with that entirely. Anybody else want to come in on that? Two points I would make very quickly. Number one, if somebody says to you in a presentation, intercultural training, that's stereotyping, you're dead. So you must always not put yourself in a position where that can happen. All right? And this is a good way of making sure that you understand the kinds of differences between people. The second one, returning to Rob's point, a lot of issues, and you're going to find this, Ralph, in your presentation training, a lot of issues in intercultural training are problems that exist within the company. So it's couched as new markets or intercultural teams or whatever. But actually, the problems are organizational ones are in the company. The fight between marketing and sales. The fight between the administration upstairs and the factory below stairs. Stuff like that. And you have to be aware, and quite often these will come out in the seminar, and you have a chance to address them. And I found that happens a lot of the time. So intercultural training can actually give rise to understanding the challenges which exist in internal company relations. And that's actually a very, very valuable thing to know about. So thank you, Rob, for that. Okay, let's move on. Okay, I mentioned avoid essentialism. But there is an interesting area, which is Erin Mayer, who is the author of The Culture Map, which is a very, very, very good reference. She's American. She teaches at INSEAD in France, in Paris. Think cultural relativity. which is we know what we think we are like, but you have to be aware that different countries see us in different ways. So, for example, we think, for example, that we are careful and reasonably, polite and constructive when we are giving feedback. But in some countries, they would see us as unclear. They might even see us as hypocritical, dishonest, and unprofessional. Whereas in countries, particularly in East Asia, we might be seen, although we think we're perfectly polite, as rude and blunt, dislikable and unprofessional. So we need to understand that different markets and different people we deal with may see us very differently from the way we see ourselves. And I think it's important we're aware of that and that we can actually work with it. Again, any points we need to add to that? Rob, Michael, do feel free to, and Özlem, do feel free to come in on this, and you too, Malu, if you want to. If not,
yeah, I agree with that. Very feedback is very important. I've experienced that. I've worked for a big four company in my former life, so to say, and feedback culture was very important, and it was driven. You are completely right by international. You see different cultures. But also, what I found, it's cultural driven. It's coming down from leadership. How you you can set up a feedback, let's say a feedback culture independently, so to say, from cultural differences. That was my feeling and my ambition. Like mm-hmm. you establish rules within the organization that ensure yeah. that feedback is given in a fair, honest, and more or less direct manner.
And that works.
I must say, my experience was not too bad with that. of course, you often have cultural differences in the discussions, mm-hmm. But at least it set the tone to some extent.
Fascinating. Okay, good. Thank you for that. All right. Okay, so let's keep it moving. And I would like to move on then to what I think is going to be the most controversial part of this presentation. But I think we are moving now into an area where we need to think concepts and not models. Now, quite often, when I've taken this from one of Erin Mayer's slides, but when you look at concepts which are presented, you suddenly see a range of countries which represent or supposed to represent particular sides of a concept. Now, the fact is that everybody understands now that with globalization and ICTs and international online contact, you can no longer stereotype by saying all Germans are alike. Indeed, if you ever could. Yeah. But so really, to typify people by the country they come from is still now quite a worrying and dangerous thing to do. However, if I look at Hofstadter, who sadly died in February, as I think you know, he had Hofstadter from the Netherlands, who actually scored people out of 100 on his 6 points. Actually, to score people and countries is no longer, if it ever was, an acceptable way of doing it. But the concepts, the power distance, etc., are very, very valuable. So here's my recommendation, and I do it for two reasons. Number one, we should all know and use the concepts developed by Hall, by Hofstadter, by Trompenaars, by Lewis, Richard Lewis, the Lewis model, and Erin Mayer and others too. And I think if we can use those, these will be very valuable as insights into the way people operate. What I think is very dangerous is to say the Germans are like this, okay, the British are like this, etc., because it simply doesn't work. So my suggestion is, let's use the concepts to examine and explore the people we're working with and be careful about the country, because it doesn't necessarily work that way. One more point to make, by the way. HR managers quite often have read up a bit on culture. say they know the names of the theorists. And if you don't, you can be in trouble. So it's worth making sure you are at least familiar with it. Okay, that's the point I wanted to make. Anybody like to come in on that? Stephanie, anything you'd like to add? Okay, I've just
so
added.
So far, nothing.
Okay, fine. Ralph, how do you relate to that?
It's right. With regard to the different cultures, I worked in a team with 26 with people from 26 different cultures and nationalities. Yep. It's inspiring, mm-hmm. but it's also it tells you also. I mean, nowadays we are living in such a global world that we are mm-hmm. having so much exposure to different cultures. I think that helps.
I do too. I'm reading a wonderful book by a guy called Simon Anholt on the great country, the good country equation, because he set up something, the good country index. And he says, actually, if we could learn to like each other a bit more, we'd have a lot less trouble. And I think a good intercultural consultant is about helping people to appreciate each other and maybe like each other a bit more. But as individuals, using these concepts rather than as nationalities makes quite a big difference. Okay, Michael, Rob, anything you want to add?
Not at the moment, because it's fun.
No, it's okay. Great, wonderful.
So we're getting there. So let's now move on, if we can, to the core drivers that I use in my training. And Rob and Michael are very, very aware of this, so I run it through very fast. I think there are three things, Ralph, that you and your clients need to be able to deal with. Number one, what are the client expectations? For example, do they put the relationship first or do they put the job first? The British like to put the job first and we make friends while doing a good job, okay? But we can go to parts of the world, parts of Latin America, not Chile, but other parts, where actually, you know, you spend time building that relationship before you actually get into working. So you need to understand how that operates. It's equivalent to what I think the theorists will call attitudes and values. But here it is, what do I expect of the business relationship? It's got to be business focused and quite sharp. Then we look at the communication style. How do you network? How do you present, as you've been talking about, Ralph? How do you run and participate in meetings? One of the biggest problems of people who are working in a new company with a new group of nationals often find it very hard to know how to participate in a meeting. And one of the big problems which I know Özlem is addressing is if you're a foreign student in a university, how do you participate in lectures and workshops? Because it can actually be quite difficult in a foreign language. Okay. Then, of course, how do you negotiate? All right, it's also very, very important. So we need to understand these principles and how to operate in communication style. And I think really, really will help. By the way, I don't know, Ralph, how much work you have to do in English in your job. Alles in Deutsch or etwas in English?
Yeah, I'm speaking exclusively German. Not always understood. Okay. But clients from English, English native speakers and French, in particular French native speakers.
Okay, good. All right, but I think that's the kind of thing you need to understand. I give you a small anecdote. I think this was the Crédit Agricole, the French bank. Never forgotten that. Okay, and then last of all, management style. How do we deal with the management style? How does leadership operate? How are decisions taken? What's the situation diversity in management? All these things come important. But I've also discovered there's another area we need to know about, which I call RIO, affective drivers. In other words, how do I build relationships? And we'll have an example of this in a minute. Show respect. How do I show respect? Number two, how do I show interest? The best way to get on good terms with people from another country when you're working with them is to show interest in the country, because then you begin to feel what their particular angle and approach is, and it can be a very good way of building relationships. And I don't know about you guys, but the question I am most asked by clients is this one. How do I avoid causing offense? I find that fascinating. How do I avoid causing offense? And that actually is a very, very interesting area. So I need to look at things like history, key moments, which I can talk about, you know, key interests, culture and the arts. Science and invention can be good. Sport, obviously, is very, very is very important, very popular, especially in Europe. Heroes. Have to make sure you choose the right ones. And of course, avoiding social and personal taboos. Oh, which can mean also you don't talk about them. There's a very famous example when Baroness Cramer, who was a Liberal Democrat and candidate for the mayor of London, paid a visit to the mayor of Taiwan in Taipei and presented him a beautiful clock. Not, of course, knowing that a clock in China can mean death and the end of a relationship. These are the kind of areas where you sometimes have to be a bit careful. Okay. I've broken this down then into something I call école, French word meaning school. What do we need to make sure that our clients, our students, our participants need to understand? What are the client expectations of the people they're dealing with? How do they communicate? How do they organize themselves? What's their attitude to time? How do they deal with teams? What's a routine like? Business process. We had a problem with a French company, big one, who were employing British workers. The British contract ran to 5:45 every day, and the French team had their meeting at 6 o'clock in the evening. British tried to go on strike, protested, felt exploited by the French. When the French realized, they immediately changed the meeting till 4 o'clock. So it's purely a mistake, a misunderstanding. But actually, while they were trying to work out the business routine, it got very, very angry for a while. And this happens quite a lot. Okay, leadership, hierarchy. What's the management style? Is it top down or is it more delegation? Okay, and then the issue, I think, of how decisions are taken and how they're communicated. Okay. All right, Rob and I used to work in the same university. And one of the things we sometimes found is that I wouldn't know that a decision had been taken by the boss until Rob told me. In other words, sometimes things happen rather indirectly. Never forgotten that, Rob. And then last of all, gender. What is the role of gender and diversity in management and leadership in the company? Because that can be very important as well. I used not to think that etiquette was very important. I work with diplomats now, so I have learned. So greetings, showing respect, getting your dress code right, knowing how to give gifts and what gifts are acceptable, and how to do hospitality are actually quite important things. So I would want in my program possibly to plan these according to what the participants need and want. Okay, fairly long presentation there, but I think what I've tried to do then is suggest how we need to look at the notion of thinking concepts, not models. And if we are going to plan a program, what are the key things we need to think about in planning that program and putting into effect? All right. Okay. So any points anybody would like to make to add to that one? All gone quiet, and I'm not quite sure if that's me or something else.
That's a positive no. I usually take those as positive statements of no, you can move on. I don't know whether that's right.
All right, well, let's move on then. And in moving on then, we come on to number six. And number six is quite a big one for me. It's something I make quite a lot of mistakes, and I may even be making it now. Make sure your critical incidents are relevant to the business. There are two points here, which Rob and Michael and I and others have done. When anybody tells you a story, note it down, summarize it if you can in 4 or 5 lines, and you have a critical incident, a very short situation, which you can ask for help on. I'm going to give you one in a minute and get your views on this. Critical incident analysis. the summarizing of experiences in short stories was developed by Robert Flanagan, who was a psychologist for the US Air Force. And he analyzed critical incidents, acknowledging there's a problem, understanding where the misunderstanding happens, reflecting on it, and then committing to change. We've got a simpler way of doing this, which I'm going to show you in a minute. The problem is, I can go into a company and I can have a fabulous critical incident which really illustrates the difference between countries or groups working together. And it has no relevance at all to their business, so they don't give a damn. And I'm basically wasting their time. So it's important to make sure your critical incidents are relevant to the business that you are dealing with or to the subject you're covering. And I say this because quite often it's very easy to get carried away by a good story and not cover everything you need to cover. Now, just to make a point here, I thought what I would do is give you a critical incident. And I'm interested to know two things. Which concept do you think is illustrated, and how would you what would you advise? This was a guy called Chris. He was the operations manager of a leading UK mobile phone company. And they wanted to import handsets from Shanghai in China. So he contacted a company, he got the quotes, and he sort of agreed a deal, and he arranged to fly out to China to meet the Chinese company director. The Chinese company director refused to meet him. I was training this company. I sat there in the room, and Chris said, "I got a problem. What should I do?" So here you are. You are an intercultural consultant. First of all, what's the problem? Open to anybody who wants to give it an answer. What's the problem? Why does the Chinese company director refuse to meet him?
Just a guess. I think what I've met is that sometimes there are different ways of communicating. You have people that prefer communicating in writing, others in meetings, other by video conferencing. Or so there may be sort of mismatch of communication styles coming from different expectations. Also, mm-hmm. that may be too early to meet, or at that period of the discussion, maybe a call would have been better, or so. Okay. Just a guess.
So it might be time. That's a guess, but it's not a bad guess. It's a good one. Very, very good. All right.
Anything may else? I have a go?
Desi, hello. Welcome.
Yes. Hello. Hello. Well, could that be a problem of, okay, perhaps the Chinese director was expecting to meet the director of the UK mobile company, not just an operations manager. So it's a matter of, someone's counterpart. Is that...
By George, you've got it perfectly correct. That's right. Okay, so it became an issue of respect. I'm the director of the Chinese company. I do not want to meet an operations manager. Okay, Desi, so you are the consultant concerned. What were you going to advise Chris to do?
If it's impossible for the UK manager to go, perhaps Chris could meet somebody lower in the Chinese hierarchy who could also be of help in these business matters. Or perhaps Chris could somehow explain that in the UK, yeah, it's okay, people of different rank to meet, or I don't really know. Well, I teach students, so I do not have practical experience in teaching.
Don't worry, you're doing great. So. However, there's one solution you haven't thought of. Huh? There's one solution you haven't thought of. I don't know if Rob or Michael would have an answer. What would you advise, Rob?
Go on, Michael, you go first.
I was just thinking, would Chris ask his boss, the UK company director, to contact the Chinese company director first and try to build a relationship between them at that level, and then say, "I'm asking my operations manager to fly out. Can you arrange for him to meet the right person?"
Very, very interesting. Rob, anything you'd like to suggest which might be the same or different?
It was kind of similar, but I think what comes from the thing here, the scenario here, is that it's not clear that there was an agreement that would be a meeting before he flew out. So he seems to have arranged to fly out to meet the Chinese company director without necessarily informing anybody. So there's no preamble, there's no written communications, there's no phone calls or anything to set this up. And I think that needs to happen as well. So yep. So there needs to be a relationship built with a range of people in the company, so the person gains status by doing that, and therefore is welcomed as somebody who is a valid representative of the UK company.
Great. Okay. Good. Excellent answers. Now the question is, what actually happened? Chris had to fly out with the director of sales, a board member, Tony, his name was, to meet the director. Chris, by the way, I didn't mention this, was married to a Chinese woman and spoke some Mandarin, and obviously was an expert in his field, but in fact, he had to go out with the his own director in order to be able to get the meeting with the Chinese company director. Now, very quickly, what are the implications? Quite important. What are the implications of this? Okay, well, let me cut a long story short and tell you. Number one, two people are flying out instead of one. Number two, one of them is doing the work, the other one is there purely to add status. Number three, in order to add status, they upgrade their air flights, and they moved out of the Hilton, which is where they were booked to stay, into the Shangri-La. So suddenly they upped the price of their rooms. Why? Because the Chinese boss would have been looking at that and saying, are they acting according to the status which they need to have? So suddenly we discovered a situation where the finance manager in the mobile phone company was going crazy because of the cost of this visit was soaring. Okay. Now, actually, Tony didn't need to be there. Why did he need to be there in this particular situation?
Is Tony the boss?
Yeah.
Okay. He needed to be there for status reasons. So, as you say, for status, he needed basically to show the seriousness of the company's intent.
That's it. Basically, the biggest concept in China and in Japan, also in Korea, is saving face, yanzi, and giving face, and not losing face. And if the Chinese director had dealt with the operations manager, the Chinese director would have lost face. Got it? And by sending Tony out with Chris, then basically they were giving face to the Chinese director, which made the deal much easier to handle and much easier to work with. But of course it would have cost more and it would have taken time that Tony could have been spending on other things. But isn't it interesting that these concepts, nowadays people are much more aware of them than used to be, and indeed many Chinese business people are much more relaxed than they used to be. But this was, what, 10 years ago, and it was actually still quite 12 years ago, and it was still quite tight. So that's a very good example of a critical instance that we can use in two situations. Number one, obviously telecommunications. But the other way you could use it, of course, for anybody who's working with the Chinese market, for example, advising on the Belt and Road Initiative or something like that. And actually, that could then become quite a useful point. And the key point here is honor, personal honor, and saving face, because China, among other things, is very much a respect culture. Isn't it fascinating? So that's the point about making your critical incidents short, precise, and making sure that they are relevant to the business and the situation you're discussing. Okay, before we go on to our last point, any comments or any thoughts?
If I can say something, what's interesting is that you make the point earlier that we shouldn't generalize a stereotype, but it's very easy in the critical incidents that we have,
yeah,
that actually they generate stereotyping if you're not careful. And we say people from the UK or the Chinese are like this. So that ends up in the conversation, whether we like it or not.
That's right.
I think one of the ways of possibly looking at this is that although the individuals you meet may not be representatives of a certain set of values, the, I suppose, wallpaper or environment in which they've been brought up in does contain those values anyway. Mm-hmm. So the notion of status, it may be that the individual concerned is not so motivated by that, but it operates within an environment where that still is valid, that still pertains.
That's right.
So there's a kind of a difference between those two things.
Mm-hmm. No, I will buy that. And I do agree with you, and I did that. There is a tendency to use the national as a shorthand. Yeah. But we have to stress, and I think we did that, and you've done that brilliantly just now, making sure that we understand that individuals can be very different depending on their experience and their background. But nevertheless, one needs to understand that there are certain almost parts of the business market which need to be recognized. And I got so many examples, as indeed all of us do, from around the world of things like this happening, misunderstandings taking place because people are not sufficiently familiar with the operating procedures. And I think the key point I would want to make out of this is what you're always looking at is operations and management. How do people run their, how do our clients, how do our business partners run their operations, and what is needed to adapt? Okay, so let me move on to the last point we have. Sorry, did somebody want to come in? No. All right, so let me move on to our last point of the day, which is number 7. Oh, have I locked myself up again? There we are. Done that one. Okay, done that. Done now this one, number 7. This I've learned from a colleague who I've been working with at the London Business School, and it's one of the best ways I've found of developing a process for dealing with problems caused by differences in operations management from people of different cultures. And it's called the MBI process. And MBI is an acronym for Map, Bridge, and Integrate, developed by Majniewski and DiStefano in 2000. Okay, so how do you do it? Identify. What are they doing? Okay. Compare. What do I normally do? Empathize. Why are they doing it like that? How am I perceived? What do they think of me? And then the integrate process. What can I change? What I've learned? What have I learned? And what will I say, do, and above all, think differently? I'm going to give you an example. It's a silly example, but it's wonderful. It's Paris, okay, on the left bank. I'm walking up the Rue Dauphine, and being a bloke, I walk on the pavement, on the left side of the pavement, all right, along next to the road. A woman of a certain age, obviously French, is approaching me. She's looking at me with a not very friendly expression on her face. Okay? And I'm thinking, she's going to walk straight into me. So what am I doing? I'm walking along the pavement in my normal way. What are they doing? They're walking on the same side of the pavement and coming directly towards me. And then I think, why is she doing that? She's looking very angry. And I realize, of course, for her, it is natural to walk on the right, which is my left. So that's why she's approaching me and looking angrily, thinking, why the hell is this rude man, all right, insisting on not giving way? So as soon as I realized that, I moved out of the way. She didn't smile, but she went straight past. A silly example, but it's the kind of thing that can cause big misunderstandings. So what have I learned? Number one, maybe on the outside of the pavement, it's not the best way to walk if people are more used to working on the right-hand side as they are in France. Number two, what will I say? I didn't say anything, nothing there. What will I do? I'll move and give way. What will I think? I'll realize that people have different reasons for doing things, which come from their own background, which is different from mine. That's it. So what I advise people to do is that whenever they look at a critical incident, they use the map, bridge, and integrate process. And that I find is one of the most successful tools that I've used for helping people get through and understand cultural issues and learn how to deal with them. Okay, so I'm pretty much there. What I've done, just to sort of help finish off, is I've summarized. I've said there are 7 points that I wanted to make in this webinar. Number one, think business performance. Number two, think management training, particularly pricing. Number three, avoid essentialism. Number four, think cultural relativity. Think how other people see you and the different parts of the world may see the same behavior differently. Number five, think concepts, not models. And if you look at, say, Hofstede Insights and other organizations, including Richard Lewis, when they do their surveys of their students, their participants, they realize that people fit different places within a particular group of features. Although they may come from the same country. So they realize that national rigidity is not necessary, is not the right way to go. Make sure your critical incidents are relevant and use the MBI process to resolve the problem. Okay, that I've given references to each of the key points. A couple of things I will mention to you so that we know. There's a CETAR workshop, as I mentioned, on September the 7th from 18 to 1900 with Alison Hale, Getting Paid What You're Worth, which may be useful. If you're not a member of CETAR and you are professional in intercultural training, really worth considering. I think one of the books which I'm finding recently and have reviewed recently, which actually works quite successfully on introducing management concepts into communication training, is by a friend of Michael's and Rob's and mine, and I think Oslin as well, Chia Swan Chong, Successful International Communication, published in 2018. Little paperback book, but very, very useful, worth having a look at. And then the MBI process, Mapping, Bridging and Integrating Model, which I think is very helpful. Rob and I are working on two training certificates for ICC languages. One of them, and a lot of this is in this course, the Cultural Trainers and Lifelong Learning Certificate. And the other one is Managing Diversity in the Workplace. So if you want to know more, if you visit www.icclanguages.edu teacher training, you'll see all the courses there. All right, I think, Malu, we've done it, and I'm open to discussion and questions and any other comments people would like to add.
I would, thanks, Barry. That was very clear and very insightful. I like the approach you had towards the business also, and to bring these aspects, cultural aspects, beyond the language aspects. I like that very much. Thank you. I wonder to what extent, well, difficult not to speak about Corona, but we were talking so much, speaking so much about cultural aspects, about meetings. I find it sometimes really hard, for instance, to get access to companies. There are strict rules that, as I said, are different from one country to another, from one company to another.
Yep.
It's sometimes extremely difficult to find my way into these. I think I'm expecting also a lot of cultural, let's say, adapting to this situation around social mm-hmm. distancing and all this. What are your views on this? How would you include this into your thoughts around cultural thinking?
Well, I'd like to open this out to everybody because I think it's a really fundamental question. I think there are two factors that I've noticed. Number one is that some countries, Germany is one of them, have been much more proactive and firm about running, you know, the way they dealt with COVID-19. And it's paid off for them to some extent, whereas other countries have been slower to do it and had much less success initially, and therefore higher death rates and higher case rates. The second thing I've noticed, and this is before we get on to companies, is we have to recognize the generation factor and also the degree of vulnerability factor, that older people often may have health conditions which are worrying, all right, and they need to keep more isolated, and younger people may just want to get out. You know, if I happen to live on the 21st floor, two-room flat, on a balcony, and they well want to get out of there and begin to socialize more and take every opportunity I can, not thinking there's a great risk. Now, in companies, I think your key is the HR manager, who will be working with health and safety very closely. They are, if you like, your champion in the company. They will go to the business unit, say, what are you doing? What do you need? Here's Ralph. He can provide this. By the way, I've informed him. He knows what the limitations and conditions are. And I think if you work and build that relationship with the HR manager of the companies you're dealing with, they can give you the information you need to be able to adapt. However, they do not necessarily provide the budget for the training. that would come from the business unit that you're actually training.
Thank you. Makes sense.
Okay, so what do our other friends want to add on this one? Okay. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left if we want it. So do see if anybody's got any points we need to make. Malu, anything we need to add in?
No, I think we are fine. Thank you very much for this interesting presentation, Barry.
Mm-hmm.
I think okay. It worked quite well.
Well, thank you. I mean, what we mustn't do is miss next month's presentation with Rob. And I am going to, I work on the editorial board of two journals we have. One is Training, Language and Culture, which comes out 4 times a year. And also we're preparing now the ICC journal, which will be coming out the end of September. And I will be writing this up as an article, which we will publish, and it's free of charge online. I hope Rob will have time to do the same for his. So, and then we've got Elizabeth Nikievich in October. So I'm hoping we can have presentations regularly posted onto the ICC Languages website, so you can read them and follow them up yourself. And also, I hope we've got the recording.
Sabina, do you have a question?
No, everything is very clear. Okay. I don't actually do training in companies. I will have to teach some European students B2 level in October who will start to study in Augsburg.
In Augsburg? Okay, great. Okay, do you know Augsburg well?
Yes, I live in Augsburg.
Okay, so we're there. Let us, Malu, I will leave it to you to say goodnight to everybody and close it down.
Well, perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you to everyone for listening and have a good day. And I just wrote down in the chat, remember our next webinar on 17th of September with Rob Williams. We are happy to see you then.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Barry.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.
Barry, that was
thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
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 Bye.